The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Hello again, everybody. Kip Kiefer with you for another edition of Everything You Need to Know. It's a new week as we get into 2023 a little more now. It's always kind of interesting. New Year's comes and you kind of adjust to the idea that, gosh, it's a brand new year. And about a week goes by and it's just the same old routine again. The newness of the calendar flipping the page kind of gives way to the regular grind and routine. But there's plenty to talk about going on right now. I hope you enjoyed last week's edition talking about the miraculous story of Damar Hamlin, who was on the sidelines yesterday to watch the Buffalo Bills barely hold off the Miami Dolphins with a game effort. The Bengals also had a tough game last night. Just something different about the playoffs, games that you kind of on paper look at and say to yourself, well, this is going to be a mismatch. This team, Team A, is much better than Team B. Doesn't always play out that way. So particularly at the pro level where everybody's great and all the teams are stocked with players who can do the impossible and seemingly win games that they don't figure to. So the playoffs moving along and a lot of great information. We're still on the air with Tony Curry Radio for a couple more weeks with Wanna Bet, the show that I'm so blessed to do with my extremely talented son, Case Kiefer, the sports editor out in Nevada, in Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Sun. And Case has great takes and great picks is the more important thing. He has been on fire the second half of the season. So check that show out each week on Tony Curry Radio and uploaded to Spotify. Wanna Bet with Kip Kiefer and Case Kiefer, two more weeks through the end of the month right here on Tony Curry Radio. I want to talk about a couple of different things today. Again, if you're new to the program, you're going to discover that this program is not formulatic and it's not scripted. It is pretty much thoughts from right off the top of my pointy little head. I try to incorporate as much common sense into my thinking and analytical abilities to look at situations and try to interpret them, stories and happenings with as much kind of dispassionate analysis as possible. I don't paint myself in any particular genre of political spectrum or ideology. I like to consider every single thing. I don't want to be told what to think. I have prided myself on my ability on how to think. And if you get anything out of this program, I hope that ability is something that will be stimulated in your own mind, because don't listen to the headlines and sound bites and the opinions of quote experts unquote, because they're going to lead you astray. So much of the time, those opinions are formulated not just on the facts and the common sense interpretations that should come from that. So much of the time, people that are telling you and writing things of what you should think about a particular subject, remember, that's agenda-driven. One of the things I did a couple of years here locally in Birmingham on talk radio Monday through Friday, and I love doing that show because the niche that we really kind of carved out, my partner Terry Quillian and I, who you hear occasionally here with me on Need to Know, we really kind of developed a show whose approach was to really try to cut through all of the material that you're being barraged with every day purposely to try and change your opinions and try to influence your thinking. And really, try to get to the facts and set aside all of the spin and the hype and the hyperbole that you're exposed to every day. And that's how we approach the subject. What do we take on today, talking about how it really is, as opposed to what you're being led to believe? And that show became very popular, and really missed doing it. I'm really thrilled and blessed to have the opportunity to do some semblance of that here on Need to Know on TKR. So that being said, today I want to start not particularly on that vent, on that direction. We'll get into that in a moment, because I've got some good stuff along those lines for you. Today, though, I wanted to acknowledge that this show's being recorded on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, 2023, and it's sobering and stunning, really, to believe, to remember that Martin Luther King's greatest moment in his public life happened 60 years ago this year, and that was, of course, the famous Civil Rights March on Washington. Dr. Martin Luther King, in my opinion, and this is coming from somebody who knows a little something about public speaking, which is a passion of mine. I embrace it. You know, it's funny that you ask, I think there was an opinion poll done many, many years ago that asked people what their biggest fear in life was, and getting up in front of a big crowd and speaking ranked ahead of death in a lot of people's estimation. So I guess from a from that perspective, I'm kind of an odd duck, because there's nothing that gets me going more than having the opportunity to address a big crowd and try and have that great opportunity to kind of seize command of people's attention and present remarks. It's something that I always enjoyed and wish I could do more. But that being said, I believe that Dr. Martin Luther King was the greatest orator this country has ever produced. If you heard his speeches, if you go back and watch on YouTube, you watch his presentation, you watch his inflection of his voice, the words he chose, so powerful, so effective, and the speech in front of hundreds of thousands of people on the Washington reflecting pool, on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in 1963 was just the most virtuoso performance of public speaking that I can ever remember. And you, I'm sure, recall all of the famous content in that speech and the reverberating words that should be top of the mind for every single person, especially here in America today, 60 years after he made the remarks, that he dreams of living in a country so that someday his children will not be judged by the, will be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And from a common sense standpoint, from any kind of intellectual pursuit, if you think about that, people should be judged by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. For that to be so pertinent just 60 years ago, and also reverberating today, because we have gotten out of that mode of thinking. And, you know, both sides of the political spectrum are guilty of grouping people into certain clusters of sameness. And that's just wrong. When Joe Biden said in the campaign, if you're black, or if you're even thinking about voting for Donald Trump, you ain't black. So basically, you're not supposed to think as an individual. The content of your character still doesn't carry any weight for people in politics, or they're trying to coerce others to think that the way that they want them to think, as we mentioned earlier. Again, this is an individual thing where every single person should not be identified by anything other than who they are, what they believe, and what they're all about. And there's nothing that I believe in stronger than that particular principle. And those words were delivered so eloquently in front of the I mean, imagine the pressure there. You stand up in front of hundreds of thousands of people on one of the most famous sites our country has to offer, and not only deliver a fantastic speech, but deliver it in such a way that it's memorable 60 years later and quoted often. Judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Absolutely brilliantly conceived and so poignant and true. And it should be top of the mind for everybody in dealing with any other human being. It just reverberates, and I just can't say enough about that performance. On the other end, the night before being assassinated on April 4th, 1968, in Memphis, Dr. King gave a smaller speech to a much more limited crowd at an event in Memphis that were kind of impromptu remarks. I don't think he was even planning on really addressing them that night. He was in town to support sanitation workers who were on strike, was going to march peacefully in a protest. And remember, peacefully is the key word in the Martin Luther King saga, because Dr. King was really built on the premise that violence and disruption were not the paths to success, that peaceful protest and high visibility and the completely civilized way of expressing ideas was the way to wear down the rampant situation with segregation and all of the problems of the 1960s. And I think it really goes against his memory when you see people burning buildings down and breaking windows. And that's not the approach that Dr. King endorsed and certainly would not approve of now. But he was in Memphis, and the night before that speech, he gave another very eloquent speech that's come to be known as the I Have Seen the Promised Land speech. And in that, he pretty much forecast his own demise. So there was a lot of nefarious forces gathering and a lot of pressure as the leader and the face of the civil rights movement, and a lot of resentment and fear from some of the circles of the establishment back in Washington. Our government has not, it, the recent situation where we've become aware of a lot of the completely malfunctioning factions of our government is not a new phenomenon, even in the 60s. The director of the FBI, of course, at that time was J. Edgar Hoover. He was a completely Dr. Martin Luther King hater, couldn't stand what he was doing, had been in the FBI director since the 1930s, was older and senile and really paranoid. And kept a really just despicable file on Dr. King, which was trying to tie him into communist influences, really traced a lot of his alleged infidelity and other personal habits that are disturbing if true, but on the other hand, not pertinent to what he the work he was doing at the time, which certainly was God's work and was best for the soul and the preservation of our country. But Hoover was one of those guys, at that time. We talk about the FBI being corrupted now. I think there's a case to be made that since its formation back in the earlier part of the 20th century, the FBI has always been corrupted and has a lot of influences historically that were ideologically and politically motivated. And it's just one of the disappointing things that our country, not to say that many of the men and women who have served faithfully in the FBI are responsible for any of these allegations, but a lot of the leadership has been skewed many times to making decisions not what's based best on law enforcement and their stated goal, but also to serve their political ambitions and ideological directions that the people that are in their charge have mandated. So anyway, Dr. King said that night that he had seen, he had looked, he had been to the top of the mountain and had seen the promised land. And he goes on to say very prophetically, because he would be killed in less than 24 hours by an assassin's bullet at the Lorraine Motel in downtown Memphis. But Dr. King said, I may not be there to see it with you, but I know that we're going to get there. And he talks about longevity, long life, you know, has its purpose, but I fear no man, you know I'm doing the right work. And the speech is chilling to watch if you go back, knowing what happens less than a day later on that fateful Thursday night in Memphis, Tennessee, as he stood out on the balcony. And it strikes me too, and I've visited, because I lived in Memphis for a long time, I've visited the Lorraine Motel. I told you a few weeks ago about how it's so enormous to me to stand in Dealey Plaza where John F. Kennedy was assassinated in 63 and look at all the sites and stand on the spots that are historically famous for one of the most awful moments in our country's history. And I put Dr. King's assassination in that same boat. But to stand there at the Lorraine Motel and look at just what a, I mean, it was 1968. So, you know, I don't really have any reference of what kind of accommodations were available. I'm sure they were limited because of, you know, segregation had been pretty much decimated by the Civil Rights Act of 1964, but this was still the South. So maybe the choices of lodging were limited. And not to disparage the Lorraine Motel, I'm sure it was a nice establishment, but it just strikes me, it's just a basic two-story, you know, not anything special location. And they've historically, of course, made that a landmark and have renovated it. But I don't even know what it looked like in 1968, other than the still photographs just moments after the shooting. But it strikes me that a guy of this stature should not have been staying at the Lorraine Motel. But maybe that's all the only choices there were, and being downtown, I don't know what all went into that, but it just seems to me that it was not a place worthy of a man of his stature. And to look at it now, I'm struck with the same emotions that I get when I go to Dealey Plaza. And even back in the day, before it was torn down, I never spent any time in the actual areas because they hadn't brought public access, but the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, where just 2 months later, Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated while running for president just after winning the California primary. Those places just bring thoughts to me of what might have been. And it's kind of a strange obsession that some people might think I'm a little bit morbid, that I want to visit those sites and think about what happened there. But it really is major perspective building material when you do, and you consider the implications and how history could have been altered, but was unfortunately not with the incidents that happened at those sites. And the sad thing too is, with all of that controversy and Dr. King still being, you know, remembered today for all the greatness with this holiday right around his birthday, the week of his birthday, every Monday holiday each year. It's so fitting and so proper that Dr. King is honored in this way, because he is one of indisputably the most historically significant people in American history. And again, in my mind, as a speaker, the greatest orator that our country has ever produced. And it's sad that there are still files not available, not released, all these years later, 55 years following the assassination. There are still information on both the Kennedys and Martin Luther King that are sealed, that the public still has not been allowed to see. And you have to ask yourself the question, why is that the case? It can't be national security. Obviously, with the latest follies with our president and all of his possession of classified documents after our former president, Donald Trump, was in trouble for the same thing. Obviously, classified documents are not that sacred. But why are they classified to start with? what, you know, why the American people, this is a government for the people, by the people, of the people. Why in the world is it secret for us not to know everything, particularly historical things that have happened that go back to the 1960s? It's just a question that I can't answer and can't get anybody else to answer, because it's just wrong. If this is a country of the people, by the people, for the people, we should have access to everything, because this is our government and our country, not some select politicians that keep us in the dark on things we need to know. So anyway, a tribute to Dr. King. I hope everybody takes a moment to think about the greatness of his life and pursuits and the tragedy of his untimely, very premature death. It's something I think that should be woven into the fabric of every American consciousness. I do want to talk about something else today, along the lines of what I started the show with. Maybe I should have started with the Dr. King and then segued a little bit more clean here, because I was talking about the information that's out there from so many different sources and kind of sorting through all that and deciding what's legitimate and what makes sense. Another thing that doesn't make sense to me is the current political and ideological situation where, you know, we continue to stagger along with just two basic political parties, Republican, Democrat, and everything is kind of thrown into that bucket of it's one or the other. You're either a Republican or a Democrat, but there's so much complexity in that. And I wanted to point out a couple of things that I find just extraordinary along those lines to give you something you need to know so you can think about the same things. Right now, the modern day Democrat Party, and let me start off by saying, I don't think extremes, right or left on the political spectrum, are a good thing. I think people that are radical in their thinking and extremist on one particular or maybe multi causes are not the people that need to be influential in decision making for the overall population of Americans, but yet they become more influential all the time, because it comes down to what we always talk about here on the show: power and control. Power and control comes from winning elections and having majorities and being able to propagate your agendas in terms of ideological and different paths to achieve your belief systems, but mainly for the sad thing is for politicians just to shore up their power base and make sure that they're going to be in the greatest gig in the world, which is serving in the federal government. And the preservation of those jobs for them is priority one. And that's very unfortunate for us all, because there should be term limits. It should be like the founding fathers envisioned, sending people to Washington to pass laws and then getting them back home to run their businesses and other enterprises. This was never intended to be a lifetime appointment and a vocation to be a professional federal politician. You're supposed to send your best and brightest for brief periods to take care of things, and then they get home to their own businesses and enterprises. But as we all know, it has not worked out that way at all. And people of average means go into public office, serve for a number of years, and come out multimillionaires, and nobody thinks anything of it. It's really a sad state of affairs that I hope at some point becomes resolved, and we get back to the roots of what we were supposed to be. But that being said, the Democrat Party now has embraced all kinds of fringe, extreme leftist views. And some of those, of course, are easy to identify. There's a huge anti-capitalism movement, people that think that this should just be some kumbaya collective kind of situation where everybody shoulders to the wheel and everybody benefits. And that's just such ridiculous thinking, because it's been tried and it never works, because it's not just all the people in that situation. There's always going to be the self-presumed elite class that's going to be pulling the strings and pushing the envelope in the directions they want it to go, again, to shore up their own power base. This collective society of everybody cooperating, you know, in some kind of socialistic or collectivist, you know, paradise is just not a realistic concept. It will never work. It can never work. Margaret Thatcher, the great prime minister of England, said the problem with those kind of approaches is you eventually run out of other people's money to spend. And man, we have reached that point now. Not only have we run out of everybody's money, we're printing new money that we don't even have, and devaluing the currency that's in circulation. So all these extreme movements, anti-capitalism, radical environmentalists that are, you know, concerned that a certain kind of salamander may have his routine altered if, you know, progress is allowed, you know, on the waterway that he occupies. There's so many of them. All these gender fluidity and sexualization of children and all of those particular areas, all these have just landed now in the Democrat column because they've been embraced and invited to come on board. And there's a lot more, but I came across one that I really was not aware of that I thought I needed to make you aware of here in the few minutes we have remaining. And that predominantly is, I saw just by accident a short video from a very upset young woman who I don't think was an actress. I think this was legitimate. She was, if it was an act, she was very convincing. But she was talking about how she had recently given birth and she feels terrible about it because bringing another human being into the world just adds to the problem that this Mother Earth has of there's too much population, too many human beings, and she feels terribly guilty that she's brought another consuming human being into the world. And she also feels bad for her child that she's given birth to because it amounts to, in her mind, child abuse, because with the Earth rapidly declining because of the negative influence of too many human beings and the rapid deployment and extermination of resources for the planet, all of the radical climate change agenda, she brought out all that stuff, and that she felt like it was going to be abuse to her child to subject him to a life in such a declining situation that has been the responsibility of human beings, you know, overstepping their bounds and putting the planet in tremendous jeopardy. Now, all of that is interesting. So I did a little bit of research and found several organizations. The predominant one is called VHEMT, which is Voluntary Human Extinction Movement. Basically, these people are trying to sell the idea of human beings stopping reproduction and just letting the breed, the species of human beings, just die out over the next 100 or 150 years, because that is the only thing that will save the planet, that the inhabitants of Earth by human beings and all of the carbon emissions and all of the terrible things that we're doing to influence the climate, melting the polar ice cap, having the oceans rise, all of this is disruptive for the planet and all of the other species. Humans need to disappear for the planet to save itself and preserve itself and rejuvenate itself. And that is their platform, that you know, everybody should get sterilized. There should be no more reproduction. And just let the human race die out for the good of the planet. And to me, that is the most insane position that anybody could take. And there's a lot of authors and columnists that write, well, morally, this makes perfect sense. No, it doesn't. I'm sorry. I'm not willing to sacrifice all of my potential descendants' lives and opportunity to have a life. So the poor salamander and snake and snail and whatever else, squirrel and skunk, can thrive in this beautiful, planetary paradise. It's just insane to suggest that the extinction of humans is the only thing that will save the day. But in the meantime, all of these groups affiliated with the Democrat Party now, when a traditional Southern Democrat votes for a Democrat candidate, he's making a de facto endorsement for all of these climate cult crazies and people that think human beings should be extinct, and all of this sexuality of our children and gender fluidity and all the craziness, anti-capitalist, anti-America. I wish there was a third party called the Common Sense Party. I'll run for president if you all will endorse me, and I won't even ask for a lot of financing. But we really need a whole different direction to get out of the gridlock of just two parties and all of the elements that really kind of completely spoil the pot in both of those situations, because all these fringe groups and all their insane ideas that's what's truly scary. So I thought that was an interesting thing to convey. Do your own research, make your own thoughts. But what do you think about it? Are you going to hustle over there and sign up for the voluntary extinction of human movement? Doesn't sound like a very viable solution to me. This planet's been here for 4.5 billion years. 4.5 billion years. And all of these extremists blame the last 180 years, basically, since the Industrial Revolution, the use of fossil fuels, the development of gas, electricity, different trends, the blip on the radar that the last, almost two centuries have been, are what is blamed for all of the problems that we are allegedly having on a planet that has sustained itself and thrived for 4.5 billion years. We don't know anything about what happened way back when. Where did the dinosaurs go? Was there a giant asteroid collision with Earth? It could be impending again. But let's kill off all the humans. Let's all die and disappear so the planet can revive itself and spin around for the good of all the other species for the next 4 billion years. I find that insane. I don't know what your opinion is, but I thought it would be good to call your attention to it on this edition of the show. Thank you for indulging me in all of those rantings and ravings. Again, say a prayer in memory of Dr. King today, and have a great week, everybody. We'll be back with, whatever comes up next week here on Need to Know, but you can take it to the bank. It's something that you definitely need to know. I'm Kip Kiefer. Thanks, everybody, here on TKR. We will see you next week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.